KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. At this hour, members of the Seattle City Council are listening to the experiences of experts in Portland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles in public funding of city campaigns. Tonight, there's going to be a hearing on the idea. It's not new. Back in 2008, a public financing advisory committee recommended the city move to a taxpayer-funded plan, but the $2.5 million per election price tag proved to be too much as the recession hit. Former Governor Chris Gregoire talked about public funding of state elections. That effort floundered. What do you think? Would you be willing to pay taxes for public funding of elections? Do you think big money keeps good candidates from running? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's 800-289-5869. Write to conversation at KUOW.org. Maybe you've already thought about this question of public financing for political campaigns. This morning, Seattle City Councilmember Mike O'Brien made the case for it.
A couple reasons. I think public financing is an opportunity to really open up elected office to a broader portion of the public, and in that process become more representative of the people of Seattle. I also think there's a perception and often a reality that money in politics has kind of a corrosive effect, and by having this alternative way to finance elections, I think it benefits everyone in the city to know that their elected officials are working for the public as opposed to for the dollars.
You know, I see city council races attract a lot of candidates. The mayor's race certainly this year has a lot of candidates. What's the evidence that cost might be discouraging people from running?
A couple of trends that we're seeing. One is the amount of money required to run for citywide office has been going up steadily. And when I say it's been going up, we look at the trends of how much money candidates are raising, how much money winning candidates are spending. You know, it's often over $250,000 today. And I think a lot of folks in the city who may be great elected officials, may want to be an elected official, when they're asked if they can raise $250,000, they quickly shy away from running for office. The other trend we're seeing is that the portion of contributions that come from small donations, and we call, you know, donations under $100, has steadily decreased. It's, 10 years ago, it used to make up about two-thirds of the donations that came in. Now it's only about a third of the donations. And so we're seeing more and more reliance on the folks that are able to write large checks. And in the city of Seattle, you can write up to a $700 check for an elected official's campaign. And so there's a lot of us that think, you know, politics should be about the people, not the money.
You know, it's been my impression that you can run a grassroots campaign in Seattle without a lot of money. What's the evidence show? Are the people who raise the most money consistently winning the races?
More often than not. It's not to say that we don't see examples of folks raising less money and still winning. That has happened. There's a couple notable examples in the last few years. What we do see, though, is there's kind of a threshold that you have to get to win. There's a cost of running a campaign. You need to be able to send out a few mailers. You need to be able to hire some campaign staff. You need to buy the yard signs and those types of things. And one of the things we're trying to figure out is what is that price? You know, I think it's somewhere around $100,000, $150,000. People can spend a lot more than that for sure. But people that are below that kind of minimum threshold really don't get any traction, and they just don't have enough to get their voice out.
I'm speaking with City Council Member Mike O'Brien. Now, you've asked the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission to work out a public financing model. What has to be in that model to accomplish your goals, and what should not be in that model?
Well, first thing to note is that when the state recently allowed cities or local jurisdictions to have a public financing model, what they stipulated was it has to go out for a public vote. And so whatever the city council decides will be, if we decide to go forward, will be to say, public, we'd like you to vote on this. And so one of the things that's really important in this process is that whatever system we come up with is a system that we think the public can buy into. And so because of that, we're holding these town hall forums over the next couple weeks, and there'll be future opportunities, too, to get input, because we want to understand what the people believe would be a good system. A component of it would be you have to demonstrate that you have broad public support to be in a public financing system. You know, you can't just show up and say, I want some money to run. You have to show that, you know, you've got a community base behind you. And sometimes that's from gathering signatures. Sometimes it's from raising small donations from a lot of people. But there's a qualification that's required. And then some way that they transfer money. There's basically two different models that we see when you look around the country. One is called a lump sum model. So once you qualify, we would just give you a chunk of money that we think is an appropriate amount of money to run for the race you're in. Another is a matching fund, or sometimes called a super match, so that once you qualify, you know, every dollar you raise, the city would match, you know, 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, or in New York it's as high as 6-to-1. And those matches only apply to like the first part of the contribution, maybe the first $100 or the first $200. So it really heavily weights those small contributions as opposed to folks that are writing the big checks.
Now, you might get the public to buy into this, but will you get candidates to buy into it? Famously, Barack Obama didn't take public money in his run for president in 2008. He felt it constrained him too much. How do you know that candidates running for city council won't just forego the public money that they could get and spend as much as they want?
Great question, and I think that's one of the things we're going to try to figure out in the next couple months, is where is that sweet spot? We want a system. To be successful, a system's going to have to be one that a lot of candidates say, yeah, this is the right system for me. It doesn't have to be that everyone's using it, but we want a lot of folks to say this is appealing. And so the system has to have enough into it and enough incentive that folks say, yeah, this is an alternative way for me to run for council and I want to be part of it. And so that means that we're going to have to set aside enough money to fund an appropriate amount. And that's what I go back to. What is an amount necessary to run a successful campaign? Again, I don't think it means you have to have the most money. You just have enough to be successful. And we're going to spend some time doing some research in the next couple months on figuring out what that amount is.
Now, some campaign ads and flyers can be pretty nasty. You might be asked tonight by a Seattle citizen, I don't want my tax dollars to go into funding these campaigns that I don't approve of and I don't like.
Well, there's a lot of folks that have some concerns about this. And, you know, the way I look at this, Ross, is when we look across the country, the jurisdictions that are doing this, you know, the size of the jurisdiction varies widely, New York being the biggest. But what we're seeing is most of these jurisdictions are allocating about 0.1% of their general fund towards public financing. So it's a pretty modest amount. And the hope is that we can all convince ourselves, the public, that this is a really smart investment. You know, having elected officials that are making important decisions that affect my life and my business, understand my needs and work for me. And we think that the return on that investment can be huge when we have elected officials working for the public.
That's Seattle City Council Member Mike O'Brien. This evening, there's going to be a public hearing at Seattle University about this question of public financing for elections in Seattle. What do you think about what he had to say? We're at 206-543-5869. Do you think that this kind of system would encourage smaller donations, would reduce the impact of money on politics? For that matter, do you think that money is too important in Seattle politics, or can you still run a grassroots campaign? It's 800-289-5869, or write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Dr. Costas Panagopoulos is a professor of political science at Fordham University. His books include Public Financing in American Elections. Thanks for joining us from New York, Dr. Panagopoulos. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
So we're hearing from experts today from New York. What's been the New York experience with public financing of elections?
Well, our experience, you know, our public financing system in the city of New York has been around since 1988, and so it's pretty entrenched in city politics, and we've had a long, for a long time we've been able to track and monitor evidence and data and developments to see what effects it's had. In some ways, the evidence is somewhat promising, and in other ways it suggests that there might be limitations for public financing programs in terms of the goals that we hope those types of programs will achieve. With respect to whether it will encourage small donations, contributions, and small amounts from donors, there does seem to be overwhelmingly strong evidence that it is, in fact, the case. We see a much greater reliance on small contributions in New York City and in places with public financing than you do in places that don't have public financing programs. But that's largely and potentially partly because of the matching system that we have in place. So one of the things to realize is that there are all different types of public finance programs, and getting the formula right is pretty tricky, and it depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to achieve lots of small donor, small contributions, matching programs may be a way to go.
Now, the overarching promise here is that it's going to reduce the impact of big money in politics. It'll make it easier for people to run for office if they can't afford those six figures it takes them now to get elected in Seattle. What's the evidence on that?
Well, there is evidence that more people run when they have access to public funds. But the problem is it doesn't necessarily make campaigns more competitive. It's not necessarily the case that it encourages more viable candidates to run. So you get a lot of these candidates who have access to public funding, but they're basically weak candidates that aren't really going anywhere. They end up taking much of this public funding to run campaigns with no hope of winning. And so the question is, you know, where do you set the viability threshold, if anywhere, for eligibility for these funds? It's a tricky question, and again, there's no clear answer, but if the purpose is simply to get more people to run, any type of public financing program seems to be able to do that. But it's not only a matter of that, because you don't want to waste the public's resources. You want to make elections more competitive, and if that's the case, you need to get certain types of people to run, strong, viable candidates. And so that is another consideration that has to go into the formula and into the mix when trying to decide what kind of public financing program to adopt.
If you're just tuned in, we're talking about a proposal to have public funding of elections in the city of Seattle. City Councilmember Mike O'Brien explained the proposal, which is not fully formed to us, but some of the goals. And we're talking to Dr. Kostas Panagopoulos, a professor of political science at Fordham University in New York, about it. We're at 206-543-5869. You know, we've talked about this in the past, and I'm kind of curious where you're leaning on it. We've heard Dr. Panagopoulos talk about some of the things that it can do. It can increase smaller donations, I suppose partly because small donations can be matched up to a certain level. And so you can do that. Would you like to see that in Seattle? Would you be okay with your taxpayer dollars going to publicly financed campaigns? Do you think it's worth it? 800-289-5869. If you're a shy person, you can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Dr. Panagopoulos, someone like Michael Bloomberg probably does not need public financing. What about wealthy people or people with a strong ability to fundraise on their own? Can't they just opt out of these systems and raise unlimited funds and run for office anyway?
They're absolutely going to opt out of these elections. We've seen it happen in New York City. It sometimes disadvantages just candidates. So Bloomberg hasn't taken public financing in any of his elections for mayor in New York City. But candidates who ran against them did and had to, you know, abide by all the strings attached to public financing, including spending caps in their campaigns. We've even seen this at the presidential level in 2008 when Barack Obama, for the first time in history in modern elections since the public financing program has existed at the presidential level, opted out of that system. And in the general election, he was able to outspend John McCain, who did take public financing in 2008 by almost a 4-to-1 margin. So you are going to have this issue come up. Other states and municipalities have dealt with this by incorporating these thresholds into their public matching system so that if you're running against a well-financed opponent, you would have an additional infusion of funds. The problem is that the Supreme Court has weighed in on this issue and has suggested that those things artificially suppress the opponent's speech and therefore deem these thresholds to be unconstitutional. And so this is not only a policy area and a legal area in which it seems to be in considerable flux at the moment in terms of what's permissible, what's desirable, and what the options are.
Did I hear you right? It sounds as though that would also open the door to the big spending candidate sort of getting writing a blank check for the public funding. If the public funding is going to go up to try to get close to that or match that, that's going to cost yet more money.
Well, so if you're running against somebody who's spending beyond a certain amount, it would have made you eligible in places like Arizona that have these thresholds to receive additional funds,
right?
Public funds, not
right,
necessarily from wealthy individuals.
Right, but what I'm saying is then the public is writing yet a bigger check to those other candidates.
That's right.
Than it might have anticipated doing.
That's right.
You might have heard Councilmember Mike O'Brien say, well, maybe everyone wouldn't opt for this public financing and the spending limits that might come with it. But that's okay if everyone doesn't do it. But I was wondering, after I heard him say that, is that true? If you do have public financing, does it not work unless everyone goes for it?
Well, it doesn't work as well, because one of the key goals of policies like public financing is to level the playing field. And clearly, if not everybody is buying into the public financing system, it's certainly not leveling the playing field. So they're not a perfect way to try to equalize resources in campaigns.
Dr. Panagopoulos, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Dr. Kostas Panagopoulos, professor of political science at Fordham University, author of Public Financing in American Elections. And if you just tuned in, there's going to be a public hearing this evening over at Seattle University when this is going to be discussed. The idea coming from Mike O'Brien and embraced by other Seattle City Council members. What do you think about what you've heard? 206-543-5869. It's 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation@kuow.org. We've got Cody on the line, and he's calling us today from over in Enumclaw. Cody, thanks a lot for taking the time to give us a call. What do you think?
Hi, thanks a lot. I just wanted to call in and say that this has been a really important issue to me for years, because it's one of those issues that singularly impacts every issue in politics, no matter what you care about. Public financing isn't a panacea or a magic bullet, but it's definitely the biggest step in the right direction. And I just wanted to bring up Maine. Maine had the Maine Clean Elections Act, and that gave comprehensive financing as an option for state candidates for office, and that's, you know, proven really well. And I won't get into all the nitty-gritty and everything. There's a lot of arguments against it, but we can just see that with matching funds, for example, you know, it didn't shut the state down or anything.
You mean when there had to be extra funds allocated from the government kitty to candidates because someone was spending a whole lot more, that didn't bust the bank?
Yeah, absolutely. And the argument, of course, saying that people are going to, you know, break the bank with making them doing the matching funds just hasn't manifested itself. And, you know, people who vote are intelligent, and they see who is publicly financed and who isn't publicly financed. So that kind of just evens things out.
You think that the fact that someone wouldn't take public financing hurt them in Maine?
Yeah, I absolutely do, especially when you look at different provisions in different states that have allowed people to run as clean candidates, quote-unquote.
Right.
So that kind of gives them an extra boost.
I got to say, though, Cody, it didn't seem to hurt Barack Obama. He didn't take the federal campaign money nor the limits, and he's been elected twice as president.
You're totally right about that. And what frustrated me about that was that Barack Obama simply didn't explain why he didn't do it, which is that the system's broken.
Yeah.
We need to have a better public financing system. And he didn't take it because, unfortunately, he can't be competitive with it right now.
Hey, Cody, thanks a lot for your phone call. I appreciate it. You can weigh in at the KOW Conversation Facebook page. KUOW is the conversation. And once again, it's not a fully formed proposal, so we're going to hear a lot more about the details. And it's been said so much, and it's so true. The devil's in the details. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.